The Ministry of Hemp podcast is brought to you by Life Patent, purveyors of high-quality CBD products that just happen to be one of our favorite brands, too. They care very deeply about their customers because when it comes down to it, Life Patent understands their customers are people seeking relief. You can learn more about the entire line of CBD-related products at lifepatent.com. Welcome to episode 24 of the Ministry of Hemp podcast. My name is Matt Baum, and I am your host. And folks, this is the final show of 2019. Today on the show, we are going to continue our theme of hemp as an alternative. Last time, you might remember, I spoke to Morris Beagle from We Need a Better Alternative about hemp woods and hemp plastics. Today, we're going to talk with Maddie Mead from Hempitecture. And they are working with a very exciting concrete alternative called, you guessed it, Hempcrete. We'll get into all that in just a minute. But first, with this being the final show of the year and all, I thought it might be a good time to take a look at Hemp, the Year in Review 2019. Probably heard me talk about it plenty of times on this show, but as I'm sure you know, 2018, we saw the U.S. Farm Bill that essentially legalized the growing of hemp in the United States, and it made 2019 a very exciting year for hemp. 2019 marked the first American legal harvest of hemp in the U.S., and with that came a spike in interest in the plant itself, not just for CBD, but like we've been talking about, alternatives in construction, alternatives in fabric, alternatives in paper. We saw the hemp market hit $1 billion. We saw CEOs of hemp companies popping up on Forbes 30 Under 30 list that they put out every year. There's been a lot of new studies released showing that CBD really is helping people with things like pain and anxiety and homeostasis, which we are finding out is more important than ever. And with that, we've seen the rise of thousands of new CBD-based shops opened by small business owners who are doing the hard work and making sure that they are stocking good products that come from good hemp farmers. We saw famous sports athletes speaking up and saying they want to make CBD part of their recovery regimen. And with that, a CBD sponsorship for a major sports women's soccer championship game that was on television. All in all, it was a great year for hemp, but there's still some problems too, though. We saw Washington bringing the DEA in to work with hemp legislation, and we've got some fights there that will be fought. But 2020 is looking pretty bright too. The Hemp Industry Daily, which is a great website if you haven't checked it out, dropped an article on December 11th about the five business takeaways from the 2019 Hemp Industry Daily Forum, where they brought in several huge names in the hemp business. And they had a lot of very positive things to say for the market going forward in 2020. Obviously, there is a huge CBD bubble right now, and if it is going to continue to grow, one of the conclusions that they came to is the price is going to have to come down, making it more available to everyone. And that is going to happen now that we're seeing more hemp in production legally in the States. The fiber market for hemp is showing real potential as well. As textile producers learn more about how hemp can be incorporated into materials they are already working with, that market is going to explode. And it looks like some predictions are saying the market next year could grow by as much as $25 to $50 million. Basically, there is no end in sight for the hemp marketplace, but we need to make sure that we are still getting the right messages out there, that we are still doing this the right way, and we are educating not just the public, but the business sector that is going to go into this, because they are the ones that are going to lobby Washington to let them do this the right way. Hemp has made a lot of progress in 2019, more probably than in the last 50 years, here in the States anyway, but it's up to us to make 2020 an even better year. So keep preaching the word, get out there and express your interest for hemp products. Look for people that are doing it the right way, and you can always do that at ministryofhemp.com. Now, let's get to my interview with Maddie Mead of Hempitecture. Now, Maddie, one of the things that you guys are famous for is hempcrete, right? And we'll get into that. But first, I want to know, how does someone like you find their way to this kind of company working with hemp in an industrial sense? Where'd you come from? What's your origin story?
That's a great question, and I love telling that story because it's rooted back to my time as an architecture student. In 2012, 2013, I was finishing my architectural studies degree at Hobart and William Smith Colleges, which is a liberal arts college in upstate New York, about 2,500 students. So pretty small, but okay. The kind of cool thing about going to a small school like that, especially with a liberal arts focus, is you kind of get to, you know, learn a lot of different subjects and kind of like really get a diverse education. And when I went to college, I was not initially intending to go to school for architecture, but okay. My whole life I had, you know, kind of been a creative. I from kindergarten onward was very much so interested in the arts. And my first semester of college, I didn't have any art related courses. And this was after, you know, 4 years of high school where I was in the advanced placement art program and spent a lot of my time working in different mediums. So my first semester of college, I didn't have any art courses. And I was like, wow, something is really missing for me here. And I became interested in the architecture program there. And you know, I kind of viewed architecture as a practical application of art. I had
absolutely
respect for artists, but I didn't see myself as, you know, being a career artist, you know, trying to make it that way. And architecture just seemed like something that was kind of an extension of my creative desires. So I enrolled in this architecture program, and it truly was life-changing for me. I had really incredible professors and teachers around me. But really where the Hempitecture story begins is while I was studying architecture, I kind of got on a fast track with that program, which allowed me to sort of diversify and expand my education. And I undertook a minor in environmental sciences. And so I'm kind of in, you know, the split education where it's like spending part of my time in environmental sciences, part of my time in architecture.
Sure.
And I kind of had this sort of light bulb moment where, you know, I was thinking about, you know, we consider the natural world, you know, it's like own entity. And then in the world of architecture, we consider the built environment separately. And it's not that common or often that we really think about the relationship between the built environment and the natural world. We kind of just impose the built environment on the natural world and, you know, hope it meets our needs. And
I suppose that's true. If you look at all the glass and steel everywhere, yeah, we just sort of drop buildings where they need to go, not where they should go, right?
Yeah, exactly. And there was one specific statistic that, I mean, I still share to this day. And that statistic was that buildings and their operations are responsible for 40% of our domestic carbon footprint and approximately 40% of our domestic energy consumption.
That is
massive.
So
if we don't change the way that we design and build, we're not gonna do anything, or we'll do very little about sort of problems with sustainability in our built environment.
And so 40%, that is a huge chunk too. We're not talking like a little sliver. That's massive.
It actually makes up more of the domestic energy share than the transportation industry, which is fascinating. You think about all the planes, trains, cars on the road, the CO2 footprint from those is less than the operation of our built environment, the CO2 footprint that creates.
So getting into this sort of pushed you into this ecological mindset, basically, when you started to discover these things?
Absolutely. It pushed me into this ecological mindset. And my senior year, I had a little bit of, flexibility in how I was able to, continue my senior year because I had taken care of a lot of my sort of undergraduate requirements. So I decided to do a thesis study.
Mm-hmm.
And that thesis study, I titled The Contemporary Relevance of Earth Architecture. So now at this time, I'd never even heard of hempcrete. I had not even, you know, slight bit of awareness of it. But actually what was fascinating to me was vernacular archetypes. So, you know, wattle and daub, cob, rammed earth, straw bale, which, you know, are used in various different parts of the world.
Okay, real quick. I don't know what any of that is. Well, what are we talking about there?
They're all different styles of natural building technique.
Okay. Okay.
So rammed earth is essentially using, you know, a specific kind of clay based soil and compacting it with great pressure and forming walls out of, you know, earth. So if you think of New Mexico, you know, kind of
like adobe buildings,
Southwestern, totally, totally. Okay. So it's that kind of archetype. And in my research, I learned about hemp lime, hempcrete, being used in France, primarily the UK, Belgium, the Netherlands. And when I discovered that, it was this moment of like, oh my gosh, this is exciting to me, and I want to pursue this. And perhaps most importantly, what a missed opportunity for the United States.
How long ago was this when you first discovered it?
Yeah. So that was 2012 and 2013.
Okay. And how long had they been working with this stuff in Europe at that point?
Oh gosh, for over a decade at least.
Really?
And there is now evidence of hemp-based building materials going back thousands of years. There was a UNESCO World Heritage Site discovered, and I want to say in India, that they excavated, they found hemp-based building materials used in a temple of sorts. So there might be even a bigger history to, you know, the use of hemp and lime as a building material, or hemp in general as a building material. But what really kind of got my gears turning was this sort of like more modern day present use of hemp lime in these European countries.
Sure. Okay. And from there, that's what gives you the push to start Hempitecture. Am I saying that right?
Yep. It's like hemp architecture.
Gotcha.
Hempitecture.
And
yeah, so that was really the crux point of founding Hempitecture. And I kind of remember the day that I came up with that name. I was in the car with my entrepreneurial mentor, who actually was an alumnus of the Tim College that I went to, and I was interning for him one summer, actually my junior year, my senior year interning for him. And I said to him in the car, I said, "JB, hear me out. Hemp architecture, hempitecture." And he goes, "Oh, that's good. You need to write that down. Write that down."
Did anybody ask you if you were insane when you were like, when you first started and told people like, "This is what I want to do. I want to go into building buildings or building materials made of hemp." Did anyone say you're crazy? Like
they said I was beyond crazy.
Yeah.
That to quote your word, insane. Yeah. Early on, there was so much pushback. Also, I think it's important to kind of contextualize where I was. And it's interesting to consider that now. So at the time, I was in upstate New York. And, you know, East Coast, don't get me wrong, I'm born and raised East Coast. I love the East Coast, but slightly less progressive than some other places in the United States. So I feel like perhaps had I been in Colorado, people would have been like, "Right on, man,
yeah,
go for it." But in New York, people were like, "You're out of your mind. This is never going to happen. You're talking about building homes from a substance that is on, it's federally illegal. It's on the Controlled Substances Act.
Right.
You're out of your mind."
Or at least importing materials that are going to be so expensive that the beginning of your cost starts way higher than someone that's just going to go rip rocks out of the ground and crush them up, right?
Right. And, you know, it was tough for me because I was so optimistic and so gung-ho on making this my reality. And it wasn't about me. It was about the the potential of impact that this venture could have from both a sustainability standpoint, but also from a societal benefit standpoint. You know, once I learned about the health benefits of it and like how people whom are living in hemp-based homes feel better, they're healthier, they're exposed to less toxins.
Yeah.
I really, you know, saw this as an idea that could have been an impetus for good. So the naysayers were, it was, you know, disappointing to me, but it never quite deterred me enough to totally step away. Although I will say there was definitely, you know, some times that it was questionable whether or not I would try to move forward.
So let me ask you, now that hemp is legal and we're growing hemp in the United States, is it easier? Are people saying, oh man, that's a great idea? Are they singing a different tune to you now? Or are they still like, good luck, kid?
Yeah. You know, I think it's been a slow sort of transition and revolution in how people conceptualize and think of industrial hemp. So my senior year of college, I was promoting this concept in business plan competitions. And I was going in front of venture capital judges, actually promoting a product concept. It wasn't like, hey, I want to go out there and build hemp buildings.
Right.
It was a material concept for creating an interlocking, insulating building block that could go together just like Legos.
Yeah, hemp Legos, basically.
Now we're seeing some of that out there on the market. You know, early on, people were like, you're out of your mind, you're crazy. And then, you know, a few states started adopting industrial hemp regulations, and then it started to become a little bit more normalized.
Right.
And now you flash forward to today, where the Farm Bill was passed 2018, and now New York and the Northeast is a region that's actually leading the industrial hemp bioeconomy. I mean, they're doing a lot in
all of a sudden they're paying attention out east, huh?
yeah. And so it's kind of funny to like look back and see, you know, the same place that I was, you know, 5-6 years ago, kind of like saying, no, this is never going to happen.
Right.
Is now like where it actually is happening. But there's still so much further that we have to go for this to really become a United States-based industry.
Right.
And we're really still just at the start, especially with the Farm Bill passing, you know, in 2018.
We'll be right back with more of my interview with Maddie Mead from Hempitecture. But first, a word from our sponsor. Before we move along, I am super excited to introduce you to our first sponsor for the Ministry of Hemp podcast, Life Patent. With a full line of high quality and responsibly sourced CBD products, Life Patent offers relief from pain, anxiety, and even some help getting to sleep. They even offer a CBD tincture for dogs. And personally, I have a pug with a nerve issue that was causing pain and she was shaking like crazy. And I found giving her a CBD tincture with her meals has helped her stop shaking and reduced her pain quite a bit. The Life Patent site is currently offering free samples of their new LPX technology, which harnesses a natural delivery system, the most effective delivery method available for the ingestion of cannabinoids on the market. You get to try 2 15 milligram sleep capsules on Life Patent and enjoy the power and efficacy of nature's delivery system at lifepatent.com. You can also check out a glowing review of Life Patent's CBDA oil over at ministryofhemp.com, and you'll learn more about the anti-inflammatory and nausea-reducing properties of CBDA. Life Patent cares deeply about their customers because when it comes down to it, they understand their customers are people seeking relief. Like I said, you can learn more about their entire line of CBD products at lifepatent.com. And of course, we will have links to their site in the show notes. Huge thanks to lifepatent.com for sponsoring the Ministry of Hemp podcast. So tell me about the hempcrete itself. Let's talk about, how do you make hempcrete? I mean, obviously you're not just pulling a plant out of the ground, grinding it up. I mean, what goes into it? What part of the plant are we using? How do you guys do this?
Yeah, that's a great question, Matt. So hempcrete is a biocomposite. That's a fancy word for saying more than one natural based things that are combined together.
Okay.
So we're using the wooden core of the industrial hemp stock, which that wooden core, you know, you grow fiber variety industrial hemp. There's a lot of steps before you can get that wooden core
sure.
that meet the needs of a building grade product. So it goes through a decortication process, which that concept there is important. Decortication is so essential to this industry as a whole, because without decortication, you don't have a way of separating different plant constituents into their valuable end uses.
Right.
So with the plant itself, you know, primarily what we're concerned with, initially at least, was just the core. You know, we want clean core. We want it free of that long fiber. I often like to explain the hemp stalk is, you know, this sort of vertical mass that's wearing a jacket. Before you can get into what's inside the jacket, you have to take the jacket off. And that's a, you know, that process really requires very specific machinery.
Okay.
But once that jacket's taken off, you're left with something that looks identical to wood chips.
Okay, so we're basically taking it apart and putting it back together at this point.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. You're taking it apart. You're getting your different parts that you need, in this case, the core.
Right.
And then that core is what is mixed with your binder.
Okay.
So the binder is the other very crucial and critical element. And it's often the less talked about part of the hempcrete biocomposite. It's slightly less sexy than the hemp component of it, but
fair enough.
It's, in my opinion, just as important, if not even more important.
Let me ask you before you go any further.
Is created.
Before you go any further, let me ask you, if I'm a farmer, right, and I'm growing hemp, and this might be a silly question, if it is, I apologize, but I'm a farmer and I am growing hemp for CBD, and I am going to sell the flower, basically, for CBD. Can I use that same plant to sell it to someone like you who's going to use it to make hempcrete, but perhaps the stocks?
That is not a stupid question, and there are many bright minds that are working on that exact question right now, because that's a huge problem with the CBD industry.
Right.
What do you do with your leftover biomass that is a lot less valuable
sure.
than the flowers themselves?
And if you can make it more valuable, farmers are going to grow more of it too. If we can say, well, hey, I'm not just selling the flower, I can also sell this pulp or the internal, you know, parts to the hempitecture guys, and they can make that. And now you have a value added crop, right?
Absolutely. And that is right there. You're like getting at the heart of the goal of, you know, full spectrum utilization of the plant.
Yeah.
You want to utilize all components of it. Nothing goes to waste.
Cool.
But there's a challenge with that. And that challenge is that fiber variety industrial hemp is grown with different agronomical practices than
okay.
CBD hemp is grown. There are a lot of similarities, but and this is kind of putting it in layman's terms, and there are people who could do much better than I could at elaborating on the subtle nuances and differences. But primarily, CBD is cultivated very similarly to cannabis.
Okay,
you know, it's very manicured. It's got, you know, spacing that allows the plant to kind of become more bushy, you know, and it's often has more flowering tops than, say, a fiber variety would
okay.
that grows kind of more similarly to, you know, other bass style crops, flax, canaf, jute. And so one of the problems is that because of just some of the ways that CBD hemp is grown, it's more difficult to process.
Sure.
But I'm hopeful, and I know that there are people out there, and hopefully people that are listening to this that are working to tackle that issue of how do we divert this waste from the CBD industry and turn it into something valuable. And I'm hopeful that we'll start seeing that coming online very, very soon.
But the plant that you're looking for is basically more of a beefy, fibrous plant that is grown for that fiber.
Correct.
Okay.
There are you know, we could really get into the weeds here. No pun intended.
No, we don't want to get too scientific here. This is I'm not a scientist, so, you know, we want people to enjoy this show.
Yeah. There's dual crop varieties, which, you know, you can get a little bit of CBD.
Right.
You can, you know, get seeds. You can get fiber. You can get herd. But primarily, from what I've seen, a lot of the agronomical practices surrounding industrial hemp are, hey, we're growing this for CBD, or hey, we're growing this for fiber. And it's very specifically purposed.
So after you guys get the fiber, it's decorticated, you take the jacket off, as you said, and you've got those wood chips, then what happens to it?
So we send those to a project site. At the project site, where the building is already structurally framed out, because hempcrete is a non-load-bearing material. It's not, you know, hempcrete is a bit of a misnomer to a certain extent, just in that people think it's a concrete replacement.
Mm-hmm.
It is not.
That was my next question, actually. So,
yeah, there's a bit of a movement right now that I really respect and appreciate, of people, you know, starting to label hempcrete as hemp lime. You know, hey, call it what it is.
Right.
Because hempcrete is, as I said before, a biocomposite derived from hemp core and lime. So you have it on site there, you have your building framed out, but you need to combine it with the binder before it can really do anything. Binder and water.
Okay.
So the binder is like the magic glue that sets off this reaction. Why limestone? Limestone, calcium carbonate, a calcification reaction occurs when you mix.
That's the same as concrete, basically,
water.
Right?
It's a little different than concrete, in the sense that the reaction, the calcification reaction, is actually spurred on by freely available carbon dioxide. So this is where the really sort of exciting sustainability impacts come in with hempcrete. Well, there's numerous sustainability impacts, but the material itself interacts with carbon dioxide freely available in the atmosphere.
Gotcha.
Within this calcification process, returning to a solid state calcium carbonate with the hemp core embedded within this binding matrix. So essentially, if you can imagine, it's like taking a white powder, you mix it with water, and you add in the hemp core. That is the essence of hempcrete.
Okay. All right. I see you working now. And that, so we've got it there, and it can be poured. Like, there's, from what I understand, there's three different ways. You can pour it in a form, or you can make it into bricks, and then you can also like spray it, right? Like an insulation?
Yeah, exactly. You nailed it there. The first style we call cast in place.
Okay.
So that's tamping it into form boards. Cast in place has, it's truly an artisanal, beautiful approach. However, very labor intensive.
Right.
The second approach that you named there, blocks. Blocks are great. They're a nominal building material. Most people know how to work with CMU or other styles of block, and there's some challenges though with blocks. You know, how does the block integrate into a structural frame? If you're making blocks, you know, it's not that likely that you'll be making blocks on site.
Right.
Just because if you're making them on site, why wouldn't you just take the hempcrete and put it in form boards?
Right.
And you're subject to sort of environmental conditions, you know.
Sure.
The weather, temperature, humidity, so on and so forth.
Blocks would be something perhaps they would order and say, we need this side blocks, and they come in, and then you just throw them together, basically. Lego style, right?
So there are a few companies out there, Just Biofiber in Canada, that is making sort of an interlocking building block, really similar to the design concept that I had for interlocking building blocks when I was an undergraduate student in 2012.
Okay.
We are now making small batch order of blocks within our new space that we're calling the Hempitecture Innovation Lab. We now have a brick and mortar space where we're, you know, doing experimentation, innovating new products, and creating small block orders for specific projects in mind. So for instance, if you had a tiny house that you wanted to build and you said, hey, I want to, build a 400 square foot house.
Right.
How many blocks will you need? Well, we can make those in our new lab now and send them out after they're cured, after being climate controlled. But the third option that you talked about there is really exciting. And it's something it's kind of new. Or at least it's new in the United States.
Okay.
And that is the spray applied method. Spray applied is, it's very different than that cast in place artisanal approach.
Right.
And it's much more, in my opinion, sort of in line with how we build conventionally here in the United States. Oftentimes with insulation products, dense pack cellulose or spray foam, it's sprayed into a wall cavity.
Right. They cut a hole and just squirt it in there more or less.
Pretty much. And speaking simply, it's kind of similar to that. You could have a house framed out pretty conventionally. You have to make some substitutions to make hempcrete work, but
right.
Now we're able to spray apply hempcrete, and we can cut off 50% of the installation time from a cast in place approach with our system that we're distributing here in the United States called the Air Easy,
right.
Which was invented in France. And so we're now using that system on a lot of projects. We're looking to get that system in the hands of more American builders. Shout out to Amerishonver, a company from Pennsylvania, who is soon to be a new owner of this. And we're excited about this because this really democratizes the ability to effectively install hempcrete. And what that does is it brings the cost down.
Sure.
And it takes it less out of this sort of like artisanal cast in place world and democratizes it to something that more people can use.
Yeah,
and
like
ultimately,
you can pick up a hose and you can turn on the machine, you can spray it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I wish it was exactly that easy, but it is.
I apologize.
it's kind of like standing next to an airplane jet when this thing is on.
Oh, wow.
It is like a powerful, powerful and loud system. But that force there, and the system as a whole allows you to install this material just so much more quickly than the cast in place.
So what is the benefit of that? Let me ask you, because I know none of this is load bearing. What is the benefit? Is this acting as insulation or is it forming the walls? What is it doing?
Yeah. Hempcrete takes the place of multiple materials. So primarily by function, it's an insulation material,
okay.
But it does so much more. Because the material itself is able to regulate moisture, humidity. It's a vapor open material, which is very contrary to the building science that we popularly accept here in the United States, where we kind of do this thing where we build buildings and we wrap them in plastic.
Right.
And, we wonder why there's mold problems and
yeah.
Moisture issues.
Yeah.
So it takes the place of your insulation, but it's also a monolithic material, meaning it's continuous. There's no breaks in it. There's no thermal bridging. It can bury your structural frame, which oftentimes structural frames are made out of wood.
Yeah.
And you're burying your structural frame in a material that's fireproof. So that's another benefit of it. It's completely fireproof. Especially now as conversations become more sensitive regarding wildfire and resiliency and the risks that we're now facing as a result of perceivedly climate change, hempcrete is the solution for that.
That's amazing. So can I ask, is load-bearing hempcrete in the future? Is that coming?
I would say yes. And I think there have been successful attempts at load-bearing hempcrete in the past. However, my inclination is to say that when you bring hempcrete to load-bearing capacities, it often has a density that's much different than conventional hempcrete, which therefore makes it act much less proficiently as an insulator than it would with a lighter, sort of more airy mix. And so you would be substituting that structural capacity for the capacity of the material being insulating.
Okay. I see. So yes, it's coming, but we've got to do some work first to make it not only efficient, but as efficient as the stuff we're using now, basically.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
So I live in Omaha, Nebraska, and I decide, you know what? I'm building a new house. I'm going to call the Hempitecture guys. Can I call you and say, I want to use hempcrete in my house that I'm building next week? Or am I going to run into a bunch of problems with the city and with building permits and whatnot?
That's a really good question, Matt. And I would say if you called me and you said you needed hempcrete next week, we might be able to help you out, but it might be tough. Generally, working hemp lime into your construction program requires it being considered from the onset of your project. It really does require a full design program, which means from day one or pretty early on in design development, the architect is considering the use of hempcrete. And you know, because of that, I mean, we've been doing this now for about 6 years, and we've had conversations with thousands of people over the years. However, we've built fewer than a dozen hempcrete projects. So where's that number disconnect? It's that, you know, hempcrete, for some reason or another, depending on the project, it can be difficult to implement, to be honest.
It's
easy to work with, but it can be difficult to implement. And so that's why recently we've expanded our focus at Hempitecture to have another product line. So we're now offering a new product that we call Hemp Wool, which is a fiber bat insulation replacement. So if you said, I've got a building project, I need it insulated next week, we would tell you, you know, I think you're a little late in the game for hempcrete, but here's a product alternative that is still hemp derived, and it meets probably 60 to 75% of the benefits that hempcrete has.
That's awesome. And it's the kind of thing where this can be implemented anywhere in the United States now. You're not going to run into permit problems and whatnot.
No permit problems. It could be implemented anywhere in the United States. It could be implemented by any person who's ever installed insulation before, which is a huge benefit because hempcrete, there's a bit of a trade knowledge, a bit of a craft to it. Whereas with hemp wool, you could, you know, substitute, hey, I decided I don't want to live in a toxic box that's filled with spray foam. I want to live in something that's going to nurture my health.
Right.
Hemp wool is the answer for you when you've already gone down sort of a conventional design program.
So it sounds like the future of hempcrete, and correct me if I'm wrong, but hempcrete is the future. It's great and it works really well. But the future of hempcrete is making it easier to use and easier to implement.
Very much so. And that's something that we've been working on from the start is how do we make this more approachable,
right?
More accessible, diversifying our product line so that, you know, if hempcrete doesn't work for you, how can you still incorporate a healthy, sustainable material into your home? One thing that I would just throw out there is, as a company, we're really looking to cultivate a community of people across the United States and internationally that are like-minded and sharing the same goals that we have. And so we're always open for collaboration. If people ever have questions for us, they can feel free to reach out. We're expanding our team so we can service more projects, so we can have more impact. Because at the end of the day, what this is about for us is cultivating that community, creating positive change in the world and impacting our environment in a positive way.
Man, and we love to hear that stuff here at Ministry of Hemp. That's exactly what we're looking for, and that's why I'm talking to you today. Maddie, thank you so much for your time, man. This was great.
Thanks for the opportunity to be on here, Matt. It's much appreciated.
Yeah. Thanks again to Maddie Mead for coming on the show and for a great interview. And of course, you'll be able to find all about what they do over at Hempitecture in the show notes of this very episode. that about does it for episode number 24, the final episode of 2019. And I want to thank everybody that supported this show all year long. We don't have a show without you guys. And the easiest way to support the Ministry of Hemp podcast is to go to iTunes and submit a star rating or even a written review if you have a little bit of time. It doesn't even have to be long. And it really, really helps get us out in front of people that are searching for this information and spread the good word of hemp education. As always, you will find a full written transcript of this show to make it accessible for everybody. Because at Ministry of Hemp, we believe that an accessible world is just a better world for everyone. If you've got some time off during your holiday break, be sure to jump over to ministryofhemp.com. Kit has a fantastic article about the hemp and the FDA. And while you're there, sign up for our newsletter so you can get hit with the latest in hemp stories and hemp education every week. We don't bother you too much, and the stuff we do send you, it's good stuff. Trust me. Be sure to follow us on social media at Ministry of Hemp on Twitter, / Ministry of Hemp on Facebook, and feel free to shoot me an email, matt@ministryofhemp.com, with your hemp-related questions, or you can call me too, 402-819-6417. Leave a message, and Kit, who I mentioned earlier, the editor-in-chief of ministryofhemp.com, and I might answer your questions on one of our Q&A shows. And these can be questions about any part of the hemp business. And we love to hear from you, so please send us your questions. For now, this is Matt Baum with the Ministry of Hemp podcast, reminding you, take care of yourself, take care of others, and make good decisions, will ya? This is the Ministry of Hemp, wishing you a happy new year, and signing off.